Well, I thought one, I mentioned the modem in this Osborne before, and it was a direct connection to the phone line. There was a step before that. It was what they called an audio coupler. It was actually it coupled to your telephone handset, you know. Put one side of it to your ear and the other side, the microphone side, to your mouth, right? Different, you remember that design for telephones for sure. A lot of people are alive today who don't. Anyway, you would take that with the curly cord on it, you know? You'd take that and you would set it down in that, and it coupled both the earphone and the microphone to the phone line and your computer. Your computer was connected to that modem, and then the coupler connected it without wires, you know. You could, this was an audio connection. It was, best I can describe it, was squeals and beeps and clicks, something undistinguishable to the human being, but the computer could use those sounds in order to transmit words, and the words came across the screen slow enough that you could read them. You know, and sometimes you'd have to wait, depending on how difficult it was to send that letter, you'd have to wait a second or two before that letter would be on the screen. It was painfully slow. But something new, and I was there for the beginning of that. That's no advantage to me, of course. But I do think that I have something to compare today to. And things took off at a certain point. They really took off. And here we are today, a computer in practically anything. Donna and I have several computers, actual computers in the house, but we don't have a computer on the doorbell. We don't have a computer in the refrigerator. Donna has a computer in her sewing machine. It actually has a screen, like a small pad is a screen on her sewing machine, fancy sewing machine. But they're all over, in many people's homes, they're all over the place, connected to the internet. It's just astonishing, isn't it? KK4JBQ.
For hell's the guy, for someone like me who took their practice tests on a library computer because I didn't have one of my own on the internet service of my own at the time, believe me, it's a very much a learning experience. It's kind of like today, where a lot of young people don't want to get into this amateur radio. Like KL7FO being told, why should I do that? I can take this. That's true to a degree. But nothing's invincible, including that. And they don't never consider that, unfortunately. And that's not good for the amateur service.
A little space there just in case anybody wanted to join our conversation. Well, I'll tell you something, Andy. Another thought occurred to me. I've heard what you just said several times. The response that a new younger ham may have, or younger person may have to our hobby and service. But consider this, with that suggestion that they can call anybody. But when we put our signal on the air, the person that comes back could be anybody. Could be somebody we know for sure. Oh, yeah. But it could also very well be somebody that you never met. Intriguing, right? Somebody that doesn't live in your country. Oh, yeah, there's some. Somebody whose life is very different than your own. And so you strike up a friendship, you strike up a conversation, at least, with someone that you didn't know 2 minutes ago. You just tossed out a CQ on a frequency, and all of a sudden you're talking to a stranger who very likely will be a friend. If you want a new friend. New friends in other places are something the world needs very badly. We have enough going on in this world in many places that rip people apart and polarizes people to an extreme condition. Bringing the world together, that's another thing. You know, a new slogan for amateur radio, bringing the world together. I like that. All you got to do is turn the radio on and toss out a CQ. You can talk to anybody. I did this once on 2 meters. A repeater that I had never contacted before. And it was a bunch of people talking religion. Well, I knew that wasn't kosher. But they were seriously discussing pretty advanced topics. And they were all serious. They weren't criticizing one another for different thoughts. They were throwing out different things that they perhaps believed themselves or heard that other people did. And they discussed it with open minds and open hearts. Now, that's unusual. I don't know. I'm just taking a guess, but maybe these people had never met face to face. And yet, I'm sure at the end of their conversation, they thought they'd found friends. And that's unusual. And getting more so every day. So I'm proud to be a part of this. And I think it could be a new slogan, like I said. Amateur radio bringing the world together. One CQ at a time. Oh, well. I can dream, can I? KK4JBQ.
Oh, boy, still got his call. KI4LZI. Like I said, I wish the ARRL would get ingenious about it, because if they're not careful, the way things are going, we're going to all be dead, and in the end, there ain't going to be nothing. That's what's the thing about it, you know. Because these younger people don't understand about, yeah, they know everything. Like Dave was talking all about the check-ins. I remember here, I wasn't licensed then, but I listened here a lot back at the times during high school and junior high, and when I wasn't working here. This net here used to average 65 check-ins a night regularly, and that's just, you know, so a lot of times, like Dave was talking about, 120. A lot of times there'd be more. And there was many, many months this net would get 2,000 check-ins a month here. But for it to continue, young people have to come into it. And what it's going to take to get them interested, I have no clue, but there's not enough of them doing it.
I agree with you, Andy. I do. For anything to succeed, you can't. Well, let's say, just for instance, an analogy of kind of a real world thing, but I'm going to make up some parts. So you wanted to go into a room. It's nighttime, and you wanted to go into a room, and you wanted to turn on the lights so you could see your way into the room and not bump into furniture and such. Well, everybody's aware of that, how that got done. You install the light switch in a certain place near the entrance to the door, you know, so that anybody could find it. And it is code, it's electrical code, that these light switches be a certain height from the floor and all that. Well, imagine, if you would, imagine there was no regulation about the height from the floor. And anybody who built a house, any builder or any individual who they're putting a light switch in any room in their house, they put it wherever they want to. Whatever they thought was right, you know. And then, this is a young person, and they're not very high. They're not very tall. They're 17 years old. This is their first house, and they want that light switch convenient for them. Okay. But then later on, you know, say 4 years later, they're still in the same house. That light switch is still in the same place, but they get married. Now, here's an inconceivable thing. They marry this really tall woman, okay? Really tall. And she has to bend over to turn the light switch on. Because, you know, now, there has to be somewhere in the middle there. And so you have the National Electrical Code, I don't know if you've ever noticed, but light switches at the same place. It's something you can almost anticipate, that's where the light switch is going to be. Okay, with that picture in your mind, and the good reason for it, let's say that there are several light switches in the house. Several light switches in that room, I should say. And, well, this fella who's got the tall wife, he builds another switch. He doesn't take the original one out, doesn't cover it up with a plate or anything like that. He just branches off. He just rewires for a taller switch. Now, people come into the room, short people coming into the room, and that switch don't work. And then they notice there's a second switch. And they try that one, and it works, but they have to jump to reach it. I hope I haven't made this too complicated. But the fact is, there has to be a standardization, you know. And we all live with that every day. We come by anything new to us, and there are already a whole lot of standards that work for most people. But some of us have to work a little harder at achieving. That's all I wanted to say. KK4JPQ.
For LZI, yeah, there needs to be certain standards, that's for sure. Now, this old house I'm about to tell you about, it's already fell in now, but it down below us here, a two-story farmhouse that was right down below here where I lived, it was probably there at least 140, 150 years. I went in it some old years at some point in time just to see how things was in it. Now, this house being that it's that old, it never had any electricity to start with in the beginning. It had about two big fireplaces in it, flues that went up, and another one, I don't know what had happened, sometime over the years that the house was there, it was there, then they, for some reason, done away with it. But most of those, and the roofs up in that house are high too, especially on the lower level where the electricity was at. They didn't bother to put any lights or anything upstairs in the top part of it. They didn't. they had just what light fixtures there was down on the lower level, and this roof ceiling level down there is very high up. Well, most of them had pull chain light switches, and they had just two that had regular light switches in for the front porch and for the back end there of this house. And they also had gravity water that come in into it, into the kitchen there from up above the house in a spring up there that they had fixed with cast iron pipes going down into the kitchen there where the sink was at there. Now, this house here is very, very ancient, but as you said about the standards, due to the prehistoric nature of the house, there wouldn't have been anything standard in that period.
But that's the house I'd like to visit. Sounds a lot like my grandparents' house on my father's side, back in the hills of Tennessee. It was, there was no running water. I remember fetching water in a pail at the spring house and running it back to the kitchen before a meal so my grandmother could cook a meal. She needed some water. And later she needed to wash the dishes, and I had to go back to the spring house and get a bucket of water. There were a lot of things about that house that were unique. Had a sleeping loft. So at night when all the lights were out and everybody was turned in, you had to go up a winding staircase. Now, it didn't wind nice and smooth. It went first a few steps this way, and then you made a right-hand turn, and then a few steps that way, and then make a left-hand turn on the stairs now. And then, and it was narrow. I mean, it was just almost, you'd have to pull your shoulders in order to get up the staircase. Rickety house, too. And somebody built it just the best they knew how, you know. Back before the chestnut blight, because that whole house was built from chestnut logs. I slept in a sleeping loft. We all laid around, all of us kids. I think there were about seven of us, all packed in together up there. And we told, well, the oldest one of us, not me, I was just a little boy. And the oldest one, he told ghost stories and made us all laugh and shiver with fright. And, you know, because all the lights were out. You had to carry light up to that level of the house. There were no light bulbs up there. You had to carry a flame, somehow a candle. So for a while we had a candle, and he went on and on, and the candle went out. And that's when it got real scary. Really scary. Or at least he felt he could tell some of the scariest stories after the lights went out. Well, I slept good that night. I did. Well, there's a memory for you. KK4JBQ.
4LZI. And I know they had what they would have called wood have in old days, a pit toilet down there somewhere, but I never was able to determine exactly where it was. But up above the house down there is a little graveyard with some of the people from way, way, way back that lived down there are buried. Most of them don't have any dates on them. One or two does, but most of them don't. And the waterfall down below it was used to taking kind of a water sawmill kind of a thing. My thinking that some of the lumber that was in that house come probably from that sawmill. But that house down there has been down there for like I said, probably all the way back to the mid-1800s it had been.
Yeah. Yeah, and houses back that long ago, they were separated by a lot of land because farming was, you know, the usual occupation of people. If they wanted to live in a town and be close to people, that's what they did. But if they wanted to farm or needed to farm for a living, then you might have 1, 2, 3 miles before your neighbor. And I live in a place right now that I share a wall with neighbors on one side and neighbors on the other side. The other side of the kitchen wall and the other side of this room, we share with other people. So it's kind of like living in an apartment in a way. I have lived in apartments, and so you had somebody above you and somebody below you. I just don't have a good feeling about that. I have, I didn't live in a place like that myself, but I visited, of course. And it's nice to go out your front door and just look over the land and not see any other house. That's just nice. It's just very, very nice. Not possible for people to live, you know, in a city and have that. But I'm glad that I do have that memory. I go back to that memory from time to time. Every once in a while, a person needs a little solitude, a little time away from the busyness and the complications of the world. The easiest way to do that is to have a memory. You carry that around with you all the time. You can call on it practically anytime you want. Or it comes to mind in conversations like this, a memory of just standing in one spot and turning all the way around back to the same spot, and you didn't see anybody else. Some people would say that's alone, you know. Well, being alone and to yourself, there's value in that. You wouldn't want it all the time, but there's some value in that. So today, people will go on vacation to get that, you know, or they go to a certain place. There may be people around, but they go to the seashore, see, and they look out over the sea. Now, there's no ships coming in, or maybe there is. Well, that's another thing. But if there aren't any ships coming in, or no sailboats or anything out there, no motorboats, and you just look, well, there may be people 20 feet behind you, but you're not looking at them. You're looking straight out at the sea. Well, you're alone. You can think so if you want to. And being alone is something that it has value. I understand that a lot of folks don't like being alone and with yourself and nobody else. Be a good thing to if that's how a person feels, so be it, you know. But it might be good to practice being alone. Every once in a while, you get that way. And you shouldn't be afraid of it. KK4 JBQ.
Nobody still want to join us yet. KI4 LZI. We have our own, and we hope we don't never run in what I'm going to mention. But that old house down there, when it was standing, they had those lightning rods on top of that two-story house down there on all points with the iron part that comes off from up there down the side of the house to the ground there. As old as that house was, you know, if you go far enough back, that was done a lot for people who really wanted to think about it. And a lot of these old houses, what few still around up here now, had that kind of setup on it, including that down there. But by and large, most people didn't do it. And back in that time, with certain people, that seemed to be a common thing. Other than what we do artificially here doing this, I don't know of anybody that does that just to be doing it, whether they're on using radio or not anymore, putting lightning rods on any house.
Interesting topic, Andy, lightning rods. If you have a house out in the middle of God's country, and you don't have, you know, like city water piped into your house, and you don't have overhead or underground utilities, electrical and such as that, then come up a lightning storm, your house might be the first thing that that lightning bolt sees. It might be the first thing. So you're a little vulnerable out there. There's no other ground that it can see but your house. So people got smart once upon a time, and they decided, we'll just give that lightning a path, a quick path. I don't know. I can look it up. It's interesting, I'm sure, to know all the numbers and just what they are. But let's just say lightning is quick. Blink of an eye. Oh, quicker than that. Well, you want the lightning to find the earth. And if it has to do so, coming right through your roof, there'll be some damage on the way to the ground. So that's what lightning rods were all about. There were insulators between the lightning rods and the roof, usually made of blown glass, little glass balls. And that kept the lightning from breaking off, you know, in a fork, you might say, and striking the roof itself. So the lightning rod would go right through that glass ball, and using copper, pure copper, right straight to, you know, a ground rod, taking it into the ground. That's what the lightning wants. If it's cloud to sky lightning, most of it is, I suppose, but there is ground to sky lightning. And there's cloud-to-cloud lightning, three types, three ways that lightning can go. It's coming from the sky, and it's coming straight down. It's seeking the earth. It wants to spread itself out is what it wants to do. It's contained, you know. The energy is contained in that lightning bolt, and it wants to spread itself out. The only way it can do that is to go into the earth. Wants to do that more than anything else. It doesn't have a mind. It doesn't want to. It doesn't want to burn your house down. But this reminds me of a tale, not a tale actually, a true to life event that happened with Ray Allison. You might remember that a few years before he passed, a lightning bolt hit on their property. The way he told the story, I'm not going to get all the numbers right, but it was probably less than 100 feet away from the house. It struck a tree. And then it traveled horizontal right into their kitchen, right into the wall of the house. Kitchen's on the other side of the wall. Don't know what the lightning was seeking, but it has a nature. It wants to find the earth. It bypassed a lot of earth, traveling horizontal now, and came in and destroyed their kitchen. You might have remembered some talk about that. Insurance covered it, fortunately, and Ray's wife, Edie, she got a new kitchen out of it. Insurance paid to rebuild her kitchen. But Ray was familiar with. He was in firefighting himself. Still did some of that into his 80s. Firefighting. Met with the guys anyway. And he was very familiar with fires that were started by lightning. He said that he never heard tell of lightning bolt that would travel parallel with the ground until it reached a house. But it happened to him. KK4JBQ.
Boy, how's the guy? Yeah, I believe I remember, as you say, him talking about it. I heard about exchanging the appliances and all. There was bits and pieces of it that I'd missed, or even I forgot about, but I do remember some of it. But he had a tower there, right there, not out back there, not far, that he had a lot of his antennas on. I don't know if that contributed to it or not, but most all these up here wasn't even amateur related. They just put up these lightning rods, and most all of them that I've seen up here that's been like that old, they were, for obvious reasons, two-story houses.
Well, it's something to be concerned about, plan for. And I don't care where you are. If you've ever seen lightning strike, you have the memory of what real fear of nature can be. I saw a tree right in front of me. Oh, it was 30 feet away, but big tree. I saw a lightning bolt hit that tree, and the energy, I read about it later, and I understood that the sap that is within the tree, when the lightning hits the sap in the tree, it instantly boils. And you know, boiling water expands. It expands, and its steam has to escape. Well, the tree, naturally, the tree didn't want to blow up, but the tree did blow up. Just as if you had set several sticks of dynamite inside that tree, it just blew that tree to splinters right in front of me. So another instance where I gained a little more respect for lightning. I've watched the skies, and I've seen how pretty lightning can be. You know, the kind of, well, I forget what they call it, a web lightning. This is cloud-to-cloud lightning. It never comes to the earth. It moves between the clouds. And when it does so, depending on the conditions in the sky, it stays up there, but it exchanges from one cloud to the next. And it does so fast that it seems like one event to the human eye. And I saw a lightning strike that it hit something in a cloud. I'm not sure what it hit in the cloud, but then it spread out like a spider web. I've only seen that once. I've seen pictures, you know, of such a thing happening. But to stand there and look at the sky and see something like that, it just puts you in awe of the power in nature. And you want to stay as far away from that as you can. That and the trees that blow up. So, lightning rods, they're still building houses with lightning rods. It depends on, you know, what the house is built of, sure, of course, where it's located, and the frequency of lightning in that area, of course. And, if it's a house that's pretty much standing alone, it's the one target. There aren't any other targets. No, nothing else for the lightning to go to. Well, Andy, I could talk all night. Probably you could too. But I can't keep squeezing this microphone. This is a Kenwood rig here. Hard to squeeze. Not nearly as hard on some transceivers, certainly not on an HT. But this microphone is hard to squeeze, wearing me out. I'm going to sign with you, and thank you for a good QSO. This is, I enjoyed it. But I'm getting kind of woozy. I fought the good fight today. And I'll get a little rest and go at it again tomorrow. I hope you have a good night's rest. And get something that you want to get done and accomplished tomorrow. The house is quiet. I don't even have the cat on my lap now. I don't know where she is. But anyway, I'll gather up all my concerns and turn out the lights. Not too long before you're going to need to take your medicine. Thank you, Andy. You have a good night's rest, won't you? This is KK4JBQ. I'll be clear.
KI4LZI, that's the reason you hear me a lot here on HDs in the summer. A couple of things have happened around here from the time my grandpa's lived here to even now. Lightning-wise, it makes me a very much a believer. That's the reason why I use HDs most of the time in the summer. And as you well know, right now I'm still using a jerry-rigged setup here right now. Still ain't got a good power supply back, and the transceiver I'm using isn't the 8900, it's a 1993 model Yaesu FT2400. But the fact it dates back to 93, it requires a memory battery that currently is bad in it, and I have to kind of reprogram certain things in it every time I turn it on, because it loses what it remembers. It always is default back to 140 megahertz, so I have to redo everything. And being at distance carrier squelch, it's not that difficult to have to redo a whole lot, and I can get into it with no power to speak of. I can. I hope when they have that over there at the equestrian park, about a month from now, on the other side of the Traveler's Rest, you can make it there, I hope. See me and some of the others, too. Like I was telling you before, when you can't do HF at home, that's a good way to be able to do HF somewhere else. KK4JBQ, KI4LZI.